naturopathic physician, and I'm really glad to be with you. Dr. Kamai has the week off, and we have a fabulous radio program in store for you. I'm very honored to have with me my professor, Dr. Joe Pizzorno, when I was in school way back when. And so Dr. Pizzorno has really dedicated his life to teach people about naturopathic medicine and science. He's one of the world's leading authorities on science-based, natural, and integrated medicine, and founding and serving for 22 years as the president of Bastyr University, which is the country's first and largest fully accredited university of natural medicine. He's co-author of the Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine and the textbook of natural medicine, which I had read and devoured when I was by the time I was a third-year student, because it was just coming out when I had started my naturopathic training. And he's also board member of Institute for Functional Medicine, editor-in-chief of Integrative Medicine, a clinician's journal, and does all kinds of travel around the world with his motorcycle, consulting, lecturing, and just living a natural life. And he wrote a great book, The Toxin Solution, an 8-week program to detoxify your life, how hidden poisons in the air, water, food, and products we use are destroying our health and what we can do to fix it. That's an important part of our conversation. How are you, Dr. Pizzorno?
I'm great, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Yeah, it's great to bring like minds together from the East and West Coast. You know, that your work and everything inspired me to help found the University of Bridgeport Naturopathic College, which I'm now faculty in. And I just swore in the next graduating class of naturopathic physicians with the oath.
Wow.
So I was really excited to do that because, you know, like Dr. Bastyr used to say, for many people, this type of approach is the only thing that really helps them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting, but over the years since you were a student and you were my classes, I've become more radical, believe it or not. Because now I've had a chance to, you know, not only look at the research, but also see what's happened in my own life with my own friends. You may recall, as a student, you kind of had to come into this medicine believing in it because there wasn't a lot of research support and there weren't a lot of, you know, elders around anymore to talk about their case histories. Mm. And so it was a challenge for us in the early days. But now the research has caught up to us, and it's showing that, indeed, our foundational principles are exactly right on. But not only that, my own personal experience, because I started looking around. So as you may recall, besides being a motorcycle rider, I'm also an avid basketball player. And I noticed the guys I used to play basketball with, they're all gone now. You know, by the time they had about 50, their bodies have broken down to the point where they can't play anymore. And we look around now and look at our friends and family, people are in our age group, and so many of them are now dead or they have serious disease. And my wife, Laura, and I, you know, we continue to eat healthy and continue to avoid toxins and exercise and such. And, you know, we really have a high level of health, and that's what everybody should have.
Yeah, I remember playing you on the basketball court there. your personality changed, as I recall. You became very intense, which was really good. You're a great competitor, and that's wonderful. But nonetheless, let's talk about your book. Now, you know, when people talk about, when you talk to like a mainstream doctor about you're toxic and things like that, they either look at you pretty funny or they think that you're an opioid addict and, you know, you're running a detox clinic or an alcoholic. So let's set it straight. What is the toxin solution all about?
So this all really started for me about 10 years ago. You know, as a naturopathic doctor, I've always been aware how important nutrition is and how important it is to keep toxins out of the body. But about 10 years ago, one of the wealthiest men in Canada hired me to develop a wellness program for his corporate employees. Now, they were oil field workers. So I thought, oil field workers are going to have a lot of chemical exposure and such. So I ran a bunch of tests on them. When he invited me to work with them, I said I want to run lab tests on people to determine their nutritional status and their toxic status, and I asked him, how much can I spend? And he said, blank check. I said, really? And he said, yes, if you can convince me that the test will help my employees, I will pay for it. So I ran the equivalent of about $1,500 of lab tests on 4,500 oil field workers. So
wow.
I got lots of data.
Mm.
So I was looking at the data. I was seeing just a lot of toxicity, you know, mercury and chemicals, things like that. So, of course, I was assuming, well, oil field workers, you know, they must be exposed to chemical toxins. But then I went and did some field studies with them, and I actually went out in the field to see what these people were doing. And what it is typically a guy, although we had women in the study, it was mainly men. They get in a pickup truck, go out into the field in the prairie, check and make sure the pump was working, the oil pump was working, and if it wasn't, fix it, and then if not, and otherwise move on. They weren't being exposed to chemicals. There was no chemical exposure at all. I'm saying, why are these guys so toxic?
Mm.
And then as I was talking to them, I was realizing that a lot of them were working in the oil fields to subsidize the family farm. They've been on a family farm for literally generations, and because of modern agriculture, they're having trouble competing with the big farms, so they're having to, you know, work on the, get a side job to support the farms. And what were they doing on the farms? They were spraying their foods and spraying their animals with all these toxic chemicals, and since they were the ones doing the spraying, they had the highest levels. And I was seeing all this disease in them and all these abnormal lab tests. Then I started looking more deeply and say, okay, if these people who are preparing the food for us are having this toxicity, how about the average person? And I started looking at the research, and I was just stunned by what I found. So you may recall way back in the early days at Bastyr, and when I was in naturopathic medical school way back in the early 1970s, diabetes was actually a rare disease. It affected only 0.5% of the population. But now it affects, you know, 15%, depending upon what stat you want to look. So what happened? Why this huge increase in diabetes? So the first thing as an naturopathic doctor, I thought, well, of course, it must be the sugar consumption.
Right.
but when I looked at the sugar consumption and correlated its increase in use with the diabetes epidemic, they didn't correlate. Mm. The whole increase in sugar happened just many decades before we start seeing an increase in diabetes. So you think if sugar was the cause, there should be a better correlation.
Right.
Then I started looking at the release of persistent organic pollutants into the environment, the use of pesticides and herbicides and things like this, and there was a direct correlation. Now, we know, you know, correlation does not prove causation. So my next step was to say, okay, can we look at people with the highest level of pesticides or chemicals or things like that and look at their incidence compared to people with the lowest levels of chemical exposure? And I saw really strong correlations. So, for example, organochlorine pesticides. As you know, they're widely used on our food supply right now. And people with the top 10% level of these chemicals in their body had 10 times more diabetes than people with the lowest levels of these toxins in their body. So I started looking at disease after disease, and I was seeing all these diseases which were much more common with people who had higher levels of body load of these various toxins. I said, wait a minute, this is a big problem. And I decided to dive into the research. I talked to Harbert Collins, showed them what I saw was going on, got their interest, and lo and behold, wrote a new book.
Wow. Do you notice that? I know you called some of these chemicals obesogens.
Yes.
That's a really great word, I think, and diabetogens.
Yes.
So they contribute to not only obesity, but also to the insulin. The issue with insulin insensitivity.
Yes. So what the researchers were showing as they're looking at this is they were seeing such strong correlations between diabetes and obesity and toxic load that they themselves started calling these chemicals diabetogens and obesogens. And now one that really grabbed my attention is, you know, not only do we have a diabetes epidemic, but we also have an obesity epidemic in our society. And everybody knows that people who are obese have way more disease, particularly diabetes and cardiovascular disease, et cetera. But if you look at obese people, and you look at obese people with the bottom 10% of chemical exposure, in other words, they have very, very low levels of chemical exposure, they have no increased risk of diabetes.
Mm.
So let me say that again. High levels of fat, no increased diabetes, if they're not toxic. And then I found a study that looked at the levels of exercise in obese people, because we know one of the things that happens with obese people is that they get a lot of cardiovascular disease. And what they found was that obese people who exercise regularly had no increased risk of cardiovascular disease. So I started thinking to myself, is it the obesity that's the problem? No, there's extra fat in the body. Or is it that they're being exposed to toxins and they're not exercising? Because if you think about it from a natural perspective, storing fat is a normal physiological process in the body. It's how we survived as a species in times when there wasn't food around. So storing fat is actually normal and healthy. Mm. But the problem is, if your fat is full of toxins, if you don't exercise, if you eat a diet high in omega-6 fatty acids that are pro-inflammatory with inadequate omega-3 fatty acids that are anti-inflammatory, then you're making fat that causes you disease. If you don't do that, if you exercise regularly, keep a low toxic level, eat omega-3 fatty acids, that fat does not hurt you.
Right, so it's the type of fatty acids, and also I guess the distribution of fat plays a role too. Is the fat kind of, did you notice the distribution of fat differently in people with these chronic diseases?
Yeah, so that's that's a good point. As you are aware, that the abdominal fat is the worst of them. And so I did not differentiate between the types of fat, and that's a good question.
That's a good follow-up for more research in the future.
Yes.
Tell us about the worst toxins, Dr. Pizzorno, and also how do we know they're in the body? You said that there are some, you spent a lot of money in lab based on your grant. So there's different labs that are reproducible that we can figure out the toxins?
Absolutely. So you've covered several topics there. So when we're looking at which are the worst toxins, the way I went about that is to, first off, I looked to see what the federal government said, and they had their list. And they had arsenic as number one. And then in the top four, they had then mercury and cadmium and lead were all in the top 10. But I took a different approach. So because I got a nice advance for my book, I spent the whole advance on hiring a couple of really bright bachelor graduates to help me answer the question, what percent of each chronic disease is due to specific toxins? So it turns out there's a formula that's used by scientists to try to determine, when looking at disease, what are the causes of the disease. So we use that same formula, and we start looking at which toxins were causing the most disease. So I was kind of agnostic about it. I didn't care whether it was a metal or chemical or whatever. I just wanted to see which ones have the most disease correlations or most disease causations. Turns out arsenic was number one. Mm. And I was really surprised about that because I don't think there's adequate awareness in our natural medicine, integrated medicine community about the importance of arsenic. Mm. So as I started looking into the arsenic question, what I found was things that most people don't realize, that, for example, 10% of the public water supplies in the U.S. have arsenic levels that are high enough to be known to induce disease in humans. So that's, and only half the water supplies have been tested. Then there's a huge study that was done in Italy where they looked at 20,000 people, followed them for 20 years, and they were in a province in Italy that had some areas of water supply with high levels of arsenic and some areas of water supply with low levels of arsenic, so then they then compared them. And what they found was that arsenic was indeed a huge factor in disease, and they determined a threshold at which you start doubling the risk of disease, like stroke and cardiovascular disease and cancer, things like this. Mm. So when you look at the level of arsenic in the body that has this significant increase of disease, it turns out 25% of Americans had this level of arsenic in their body. So this is not unusual. This is one quarter of our population just from one toxin is increasing the disease risk.
I know they used it a lot on potatoes and rice, and then, of course, the cupric arsenate that's found in the pressure-treated lumber.
Right.
So those are sources.
Yeah, so the good news is that modern rules are now starting to limit that use of arsenic. The bad news is that there's still tons of it out there in the environment. Mm-hmm. And arsenic is still used in chickens to help get rid of parasites. It's not intentionally used in rice growing, but if there's arsenic in the rice if there's arsenic in the water that rice is growing in, the rice is really good at absorbing that arsenic and delivering it to our bodies. So most likely, in terms of the disease causation, the arsenic in the water is the worst, but the arsenic in chicken and in rice is contributing to it as well.
And then I mentioned in your book about cadmium, that if you grow vegetables in soil that's not high in nutrients, that it tends to pick up heavy metals instead. You know, it's kind of, when I was reading that, I was thinking, oh, that's an analogy for our body, because if our body is low in these competitory minerals, then we'll also substitute the heavy metals for healthy minerals.
Exactly. Exactly true. So what's happening here, and my attention on Cameron Rhee got captured by a study that was actually done in Seattle. So the researchers in Seattle looked at osteoporosis in women, and they were seeing a very strong correlation between the cadmium level in a woman and the amount of osteoporosis they have. As a matter of fact, they determined that 20% of osteoporosis in women in North America is due to cadmium toxicity. So the next question is, well, where's all cadmium coming from? First off, the first and most obvious source is cigarette smoking. So it turns out that people who smoke have about twice as much cadmium in their bodies as people don't smoke. But they found an even bigger factor, and that was eating conventionally grown soybeans. So the soybeans are being grown with high-phosphate fertilizers, and some of those high-phosphate fertilizers are contaminated with cadmium. And the beans, particularly soybeans, are really good at absorbing cadmium from the soil. And if that soil is deficient in zinc, which is what happens when you grow with synthetic fertilizer, you don't put trace minerals back into the soil, they absorb even more cadmium. Mm. So they figured out that the osteoporosis was coming from women eating soy products.
Yeah, that's just amazing. You also mentioned that a lot of different toxins come from what I call the pretty poisons or HABAs.
Good one. That's a
good one.
You can
use that, Dr. Pizzorno, pretty poisons.
I'll have to use that. That's great. And so, and you're right on. So the health and beauty aids have intentionally added to them multiple chemicals for a number of purposes, but the primary purpose that they're used for is to solubilize and stabilize fragrances. So put in things called phthalates. So the phthalates, they work great to help make the health and beauty aids work better, but the phthalates poison insulin receptor sites. So what's happening is that when you're using health and beauty aids, and by the way, this comes from a bunch of plastics as well, when you're using these things, you absorb these chemical toxins into the body, and it goes through the skin just fine. And when it gets to our cells, they actually bind to the same places in the cells that insulin normally activates to get the cells to absorb sugar. And it turns out that next to arsenic, phthalates are the number two worst cause of diabetes in our country. And it's all under our control. Basically use health and beauty aids that are low in phthalates, and you dramatically decrease your risk of diabetes.
Wow, that's fascinating. So they actually compete with insulin at that receptor site.
Yes, exactly.
Now, we've heard a lot about mercury. We can't leave this subject without mercury. There's all kind. I always teach my students it's the fish and the fillings, the two F, that are the two most things. But you mentioned that folks in New England, where I live in Connecticut, there's a lot of coal that's burned, and we get a lot of mercury from coal as well.
Yes. So there are a number of sources of mercury. Number one source of mercury is actually so-called silver fillings. So silver fillings are actually 55% mercury. And so every filling, every day, leaks about one microgram of mercury into the body. Now, most of it's not absorbed, but some of it is. So we actually started then looking at the amount of mercury in the body and do things like, let's do a brain biopsy. So you have a person who's dead. You put a needle into their brain because internal life people don't want you to put needles into the brain. So you put a needle into the brain, and the amount of mercury in the brain directly correlates with the amount of fillings in a person's mouth. Not only that, but research has also looked at the amount of mercury in the person and looking at things like psychoneurodegeneration, dementia, things of this nature, and mercury is clearly the toxin. It comes from silver fillings. It comes from eating fish that's been contaminated, particularly big fish. And it comes from living in an area where there's coal burning for energy, because that coal burning for energy puts a bunch of mercury into the air. So I'm kind of a, politically incorrect when I'm saying to people, all this brouhaha about global warming from coal burning is paying attention to the wrong toxin. The mercury being released in the environment from the coal burning is far worse than the carbon dioxide.
Mm, yeah.
So it's just a huge, huge problem we've got to deal with.
Now, you know, people have certainly genetic potential to detoxify things, and I know you brought up a great example of your own family, great-grandfather. Hey, you know, it's interesting. Where are they from? I just went to Italy to reach my roots. My father's from north of Venice, up at the foothills of the Alps, too, and I noticed that you were talking about that.
Really?
Yeah.
So guess what? That's where my family comes from as well.
Yeah.
They're from north. Actually, there's a little different. They're on the other side of Italy, but they're north of Genoa.
They're on that side. Okay, we went to Cinque Terre and Genoa around that area too. Cool. All right, that's interesting. Yes. But tell us a little bit about, the family dynamics and genetics, because a lot of folks might say, my dad lived till he was 90, and he sprayed this, that, and the other thing, and he smoked every day of his life, and I have the same genes. So are genes a curse, or are they guaranteed that you're going to live to be 90 something like your relatives?
Yeah, that's a good question. So indeed, our genetics have a huge impact on our nutritional needs, as well as our susceptibility to environmental toxins. And some people have the ability to be very resistant to environmental toxins, so they can smoke their whole life and never suffer any problems. Whereas other people, particularly those you might call the yellow canaries, their enzymes for detoxifying these poisons and for protecting themselves from these poisons don't work very well. So, for example, one of the key ways our body protects us from environmental toxins is with glutathione. So now, as you know, glutathione is our most important intramitochondrial and intracellular antioxidant, and that antioxidant capability is incredibly important for the environmental toxins because almost all of them induce oxidative stress. But in addition, glutathione plays a key role in getting mercury out of the body, and also plays a key role in the liver for neutralization and detoxification of these chemical toxins. So it turns out that our wonderful bodies, when we're exposed to toxins, increases the production of glutathione by upregulating an enzyme called GGT. But 10% of the population has the genetics where they don't increase their GGT production, so they're less able to protect themselves from the environmental toxins, and they're the ones you might call the yellow canaries. They're the ones who get damaged most easily by these environmental toxins.
Yeah, so one of the ways you talk about in your book, the toxin solution, is one of the key things is, of course, to avoid exposure and prevent the toxins from kind of getting in your body, and then get your detoxification organs, which we'll talk about that, and the emunctories, the old naturopathic term, the emunctories, going, and start to get these toxins out. So you can really get these toxins out. Have they done studies where they've taken the sweat or urine of people that are toxic and proven that these toxins are being mobilized, Dr. Pizzorno?
Great question. So have you ever had the chance to look at the works or listen to the lectures of Stephen Genuis out of Edmonton, Alberta?
Yeah.
Yes, okay, so you know about his work. So if you ever have a chance to listen to him, he's fantastic. So that's exactly what he did. He took a bunch of people.
That was a loaded question, by the way.
Okay. It's not surprising because I know you studied.
I'm just trying to get you to talk about these wonderful things. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so you're going to love this. So about 3 years ago, I happened to be in Edmonton, Alberta, and I invited him out to lunch.
Mm.
We went to this organic vegetarian restaurant. We sat down, and I'm not kidding you. When I next looked up, it was 2 hours later. It was so much fun talking with this guy. We had a lot of data to share with each other. So anyway, so he's one of those guys. I love what he does. He says, well, everybody kind of believes that sweating detoxifies you. Let's measure. So he took a bunch of volunteers, put them in a sauna, measured the sweat that was coming out, see what was in it, and it was full of toxins. It had cadmium and mercury and PCBs and DDT and all these things in it. So clearly, sweating is actually a very effective way of getting toxins out of the body.
It's not the sweat. I remember Dr. Crinion when he taught us environmental medicine at Bastyr.
Yes.
It's the sebum, right, coming out of your pores, the fat that comes out of your pores that carries this out?
Yes. So the best sweating to do this is long-term modest temperature, so we start getting that oily sweat. And that oily sweat, many of these toxins are fat-soluble, and that's where you get a lot of this toxic material.
Interesting, yeah. So sweating has to be part of the toxin solution, that's for sure.
Yes, and that's why I describe that in the book. But also, as you recall in the book, what I say to people is doing a detoxification program before your body is ready is not a good strategy.
Yeah, the very folks who want to detox can't really do it right away. That's kind of like the conundrum. The very people that sit in your office and they need to detox, and you tell them, well, you're not ready to do the fasting or detoxification right away, they look at you like, oh, really? But then
exactly.
You say, well, we'll get you ready. So how in your book do you teach people how to get ready for detoxing?
Yeah, so, and that is indeed, as you say, a big issue. So what's happening in our modern world, the combination of nutritional deficiencies and environmental toxins has severely damaged the organs of our body, particularly our detox organs. So I take people through a series of two-week programs where the first two weeks I say to people, here's where the toxins are coming from, be aware of them, and stop letting the toxins in your body. There's no point in doing a detox program if you keep letting the toxins in. So I say, here's 2 weeks, here's how you stop the toxins in. Now let's prepare your body to get the toxins out. The first thing we do, we spend 2 weeks cleaning up the gut. Because as you recall, gut has an unhealthy gut produces lots of toxins that overload the liver. To clean up the gut. Mm-hmm. Then we work on the liver. Let's get the liver functioning properly. Let's get the bile flowing properly. Let's make sure the nutrients necessary for the enzymes in the liver to work properly are taken care of. And then the third one we do is the kidneys. And this is another example of a problem that didn't used to exist. Again, I remember when I was in naturopathic medical school half a century ago, kidney failure was incredibly unusual. But now we've got these dialysis centers all over the place. All this kidney failure. And the kidney failure is happening because of these environmental toxins, particularly things like glyphosate. So anyway, so we then go through a program and say, okay, now, how do we get our kidneys working properly so we can get rid of these toxins? So then after going through kind of a two-week program for each one of those, I then, on the final 2 weeks, say to people, okay, now, your body's ready. Now let's put you on the saunas. Let's put you on a strongly alkalinizing diet. Let's give you these herbal medicines and nutrients, and now let's get started getting these toxins out of the body. But I also make the point of, don't do it too quickly. We need to give the body a chance to get the toxins out. Because if you release things too quickly, you're now risking the problem of getting the toxins out and mobilize them more quickly your body can get rid of, and you can make yourself more toxic. So one of the points I try to make with the book is you've got to be patient. You've got to give your body time to get these toxins out. Some of the case histories I give, for example, I have one case history. Actually, I don't know if this one ended up in the book or not. By this woman from Canada, 67 years old, suffering from early signs of dementia. I checked her out. She had super high levels of mercury, and she was quite frightened. So I put her on my detox program. It took a year and a half. I would be clear with people, it takes time. But a year and a half later, all her symptoms of dementia were gone. Her hair was stronger. Her skin was stronger. She had a new lease on life. It was just remarkable how effective it was. But it takes time.
Well, I never told you about my story. Interesting. When I went out to the summer before I went to Bastyr, I painted houses to try to make a living.
Gosh.
And I sandblasted an old mansion in Setauket, New York, real old place. George Washington stayed in Setauket, and there's a new cable program on all that on spies. Anyway, Spies of the Revolution, but nonetheless. I came to Bastyr, and during Physician Heal Thyself, we were required to go to the clinic. And, you know, I had never really seen a naturopathic doctor because they really didn't exist too much, except when I went over to Connecticut occasionally to visit, being from Long Island and New York. There's no licensing there. You know, gone are the days of Lust when he was there in New York. But nonetheless, you know, I went and I had a weird type of anemia, and I actually went to see our good old buddy John Hibbs. Mm. And Dr. Hibbs said, there's something wrong with you. You got this strange anemia. What?" And he started probing questions like any good physician would. And, yeah, it turns out that my lead was pretty astronomical from sandblasting the homes. And
yes.
You know, I wanted to make it through naturopathic school and not have dementia, so it took me about 2 years to get lots of the lead out. And regularly I still go and do provoked urine, and sometimes I submit my nails to the lab and all kinds of other interesting ways to look at long-term storage of lead and mobilization. And I've gotten it under control, but, boy, it was real scary. So many homeowners are out there using all kinds of chemicals that they pick up at the local hardware stores and the big stores like that, and a lot of these chemicals really should be handled by professionals and not weekend warriors.
Yes, very well said. That's a great example. You may recall one of the stories I told when you were a student, and actually a person who ended up becoming a naturopathic doctor. I had this young man who came to see me in private practice before I started last year, and he was a student at the university, and he would come see me every fall being incredibly sick, and I figured out he was being a house painter during the summertime, and he was doing exactly what you're doing, you know, sanding things with all his blooded paint and then putting on paints which had chemicals, volatile chemicals in it and such. He gets sick every fall. I put him on a detox program, and he'd clear up and do fine. And we went through three cycles of this where he'd be healthy winter and spring. You go and work during the summer, get totally toxic. I spend the fall detoxifying him, he'd get back to normal. And he said, wait a minute, this is not a good way to live my life. And he ended up becoming an naturopathic doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so so preventing, what are some recommendations that you have in your book for preventing the, you know, exposure to these toxins, pretty poisons? I mean, is it as simple as wearing gloves and a respirator, or are there other measures people can take?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and one I really struggled with, because I want to live in a modern civilization. I want to go live in a cave somewhere. So the issue is, how do we make modern civilization work for us? And so I think it first starts by demanding of the people who produce products that they produce products that are not contaminated. This can all be done. There's no reason not to. So first off, vote with your pocketbook, and that is buy organically grown food. Don't buy conventionally grown foods. Organically grown foods not only have more nutrients in them, but have dramatically less levels of toxins. As you may know, I'm writing a book with Walter Crinion right now. It's going to be a textbook for doctors, and it's entitled Clinical Environmental Medicine. It's actually due to the publisher this month.
Oh, fabulous. I'll have to tell my students about that, yeah.
Oh, please do. I'm so excited writing this book with Walter, because we are putting together for the first time an authoritative resource for doctors how environmental toxins are causing disease, how to diagnose it, how to get them out of the body. And the research we're finding is just stunning. And one of the ones, which put me on this little side channel here, is I just finished editing one of the chapters that Walter wrote, which was on foodborne environmental toxins. And our foods are just packed with toxins. And one of the things we did was we looked at organically grown foods versus conventionally grown foods. And organically grown foods, or we say conventionally grown foods, have 3 to 10 times levels of toxins in them. I mean, it's just dramatically different.
Yeah. You mentioned Roundup, Dr. Pizzorno. You mentioned and kidney failure. That's pretty scary.
Yes. See, this use of Roundup is an example where clever researchers can mislead people. So if you look at glyphosate, which is the supposed active ingredient in Roundup, it is toxic, but it's not terrible, but it's clearly toxic. But the problem is Roundup is only 50% glyphosate. The rest is, quote, inert petroleum distillates. Well, when researchers looked at Roundup versus glyphosate, they found it was about 1,000 times more toxic. So what's happening is, while the glyphosate research doesn't seem to be very bad, the correlation with glyphosate in the body is actually pretty strong, because glyphosate in the body is actually a marker of exposure to those other really nasty chemicals in the Roundup that's being used by people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when we're looking at these various foods, it's critically important to eat organically grown foods.
Yeah.
Second is the health and beauty aids. And the good news is that, again, there are a number of manufacturers that produce health and beauty aids, as well as household cleaning products that don't have all these toxic chemicals in them. So we can just make these choices to get products that have lower levels of toxins. In your home, throw away all your plastic storage containers, because they leak chemicals. They leak bisphenol A, they leak phthalates, et cetera, and replace them with glass. That's something we've done in our home over the last 6 months. As we've seen more and more research, we went through and not only threw out all our plastic containers, we also threw out all our plastic lids. So we only now have glass containers and glass lids.
Oh, glass lids, too.
For storing our
foods.
Yeah, glass lids, too. I mean, that's even more extreme. You know,
yeah.
You don't necessarily have to go that far. But my belief is that there's so many toxins that we can't avoid. We better do everything we can to get rid of the toxins we can avoid.
Right. So what do we do now to, you mentioned kind of preparing our gut, our liver, and the kidneys, and then, you know, the homunculus mobilizing the toxins. So you the foundation of naturopathic medicine, like Hippocrates said, food is medicine, medicine is food. So there's a lot of great foods that help us detox. Can you list a couple for the listeners?
So I'm going to say something that may sound incredibly simple, but I'm going to start with the most important thing you can do, and that is increase fiber. Mm. So you might say, well, fiber, and so here's what's going on. In general, our bodies are actually fairly good at getting rid of many of these chemicals, many of these metals. For example, we dump about 1% of our body load of mercury into the gut every day. So you might think, well, if we can get rid of 1% every day, mercury shouldn't be a problem. The problem is we reabsorb 99.5% of the mercury we just dumped. So what's going on? So what's going on is that as we evolved as a species, we're consuming between 100 and 150 grams of fiber every day. And so when our body and our liver is dumping the toxins into the gut, it's expecting there to be fiber there to bind to the toxins, get out through the stool. If there's no fiber, then something called enterohepatic recirculation brings fiber back in, brings the toxins back into the body. So how much fiber does the average person consume? It's only 15 to 20 grams a day. So we are way below the amount of fiber necessary for our body's own normal systems to function properly. So I start with fiber, basically high-fiber foods, beans, whole grains like rice and oats. You want to make sure you get rice that's low in arsenic and make sure they're all organically grown. I don't recommend wheat because too many people react to it. Mm-hmm. So basically getting fiber in, you can take a supplemental fiber. I don't care how you do it, just got to get a bunch of fiber in. The second thing is we've got to support the glutathione. And the way to support the glutathione is by eating foods high in cysteine or taking a supplement. So if you're taking a supplement, N-acetylcysteine, or NAC for short, is very good at increasing glutathione levels in the body. 500 milligrams twice a day will increase glutathione levels by 30%. So not only do these higher levels of glutathione help you get rid of the toxins more effectively and protect you from oxidative damage from the toxins, it also turns out to be a really smart longevity strategy because glutathione plays a huge role in protecting the mitochondria from the oxidative stress that's produced simply by creating ATP, the energy for our body to function properly. So that's really effective. Now, there are other things you can do as well. For example, there's a little bit of data on cilantro. It may be helpful for metal toxins, but unfortunately, the data is not very strong.
But it does have a lot of sulfur, cilantro. I've looked at the chemical structure of some of the actives in cilantro, yeah.
Great. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about eggs? You know, they're full of sulfur. As long as they're organic and raised, you know, sensibly, I noticed in your diet, some mornings we start the mornings with eggs. What's your feelings about eggs?
So I think eggs, again, but with the caveat, as you just described, eggs that are being properly raised are an incredibly nutritious food and very, very important part of a healthy diet. They have all the amino acids we need. They have sulfur compounds we need for detoxification. If they're free-range grown, particularly if they're fed flax seeds, they have a lot of good omega-3 fatty acids. I think that the eggs are a very healthy food. So they're one of the few foods that I recommend pretty regularly in the book.
It's interesting, in the ancient systems of medicine, Dr. Pizzorno, you know, that started this whole idea. I mean, detoxification is ancient. You know, when we look at the Ayurvedic sciences, they believed in, you know, panchakarma and things like that. But one fascinating thing is they would always, when you study this, because I've studied Ayurveda, you start by loading the body up with oils. You saturate the body with oils for good, healthy oils for a week or two. And then the doctor says, okay, I think you're ready to start the sweating and the other purgative type of therapies. You were talking about healthy oils being important. Aren't they important for, like, the liver carrying the fat-soluble toxins out of the body?
Very good point. And you're exactly right. They're critical. Because most of the worst toxins are fat-soluble. And so if you don't have enough fats in your diet, you're going to have trouble getting rid of those fat-soluble toxins. let me kind of branch off here a little bit and say writing this book was in some ways the most depressing thing I've ever done in my professional life. Because I was finding all this research showing that all this huge increase in virtually every disease in every age group is all due to toxins. You know, it's all something we didn't need to do to ourselves. So that was the bad part. The good part was that we can do something about it. And so we can get these toxins out. And it just goes back to these foundational naturopathic principles, and that is get the nutrients in, get the toxins out. And so the more people are able to do this, the better chance they're going to have to restore their health.
Yeah, so we have to support. Now, you mentioned kind of supporting your liver. Now, when you're saying that people have a toxic liver, it's not like saying they have hepatitis or some liver disease.
Right.
I know we have to be careful what we say to patients. I know, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pretty hesitant not to use the term toxic liver.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a term that's too easily discounted.
Correct, yeah.
Because our livers were designed to detoxify things. But what's happened is we've impaired our liver's ability to detoxify, and we've overloaded it. Most people don't realize that the biggest toxic load on the liver turns out to be the gut. So when people have the wrong kind of bacteria in their gut, those bacteria are secreting chemicals that put a huge load on the liver to detoxify them before they get into circulation. And as people's livers become more toxic, because they become more overloaded with toxins, and as they start developing more and more nutritional deficiencies, and over life, as they accumulate toxins, start damaging their DNA, what happens is they're less and less able to detoxify. So one thing that was so obvious to me, looking at the research, is that up until about the age of 40, you don't see a lot of correlation with degenerative disease and human beings. And the reason is that up until about the age of 40, our bodies are still working pretty well. Our enzymes aren't, our DNA is not damaged too badly. We haven't built up too high a toxic level in our body. But just about 40, all hell breaks loose. At this point, so many of these toxins have accumulated into the body that now they're causing damage. But not only that, but we've now damaged our DNA so much that we can no longer adapt to the toxins, we are no longer able to produce the enzymes in the liver to be as effective as they need to be to get the toxins. So now you see all this disease. So what people have considered to be diseases of just our kind of standard as people get older, no, they're only happening because we damaged our bodies so much. So you recall one of the stories I give in the book is I have the great pleasure of having known my great-grandfather. So I come from a relatively long-lived family. And so I have a picture of my great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, myself when I was about 7 years old, and my great-grandfather was about 92 years old at the time. And my great-grandfather died at age 95, outlived his wife by 5 years, never saw a doctor in his life, had no apparent disease. So if you look at the picture, you see him standing tall. He doesn't have a cane. He doesn't have swollen knees.
Yeah.
He's not stooped over.
I see.
And not only
it,
that,
yeah.
But his brain's working just fine. Because
right.
I know, because I was 10 years old when he decided he was done with life. And I used to play Italian strategy card games with him, triple set, if you want to know which one it was.
Yeah, sure.
And this old guy would beat me all the time. I was thinking, how can this old guy beat me all the time when I beat all my friends playing strategy games? And the reason was that his brain was working just fine. There's no dementia there.
Right.
He lived independently, and at one of our annual family get-togethers, you know, big Italian family get-togethers, he said to the family, he said, I've had a good life. I have all these great grandchildren, and I'm kind of lonely. My wife's been dead for 5 years, and he said, I think I'm done. And a week later, he was dead.
Wow.
And think to myself, that's the way to go. Just have a full life, and then all done at once. So then I look at my grandfather. So my great grandfather. Totally Mediterranean-type lifestyle, Mediterranean-type diet, grew a lot of his own food, lived independently, didn't expose himself to toxins, except 1 to 2 glasses of red wine every night. Okay, so, that 1 to 2 glasses of red wine every night is actually health-promoting.
Yeah.
So he did this great. My grandfather was mainly Mediterranean, but, he lived in America most of his life and adopted some of the American things, and yeah, he also outlived his wife, but he lived the last 20 years of his life in assisted living in a nursing home, and he had some disease. He also died at 95, and he was clearly nowhere near as vital as my great-grandfather. And then there's my dad, whom I love dearly, and who was 100% American. And that is, he took great pride in being American, made sure he did not teach his children Italian, didn't worry about what he ate. He thought, it's foods. It's food. It's food. Didn't worry about toxins. We had a garage with all kinds of solvents in it. Mm. My poor dad, by age 95, could no longer drive safely at night. By age 83, had dementia, died at age 88, osteoporosis, osteoarthritis, heart disease. I mean, you name it. Thank you, conventional medicine, for keeping him alive as long as you did, but he just totally degenerated. It was appalling to see what happened to him, because he had the good genes, too. He outlived his wife as well, but he had all this disease. So guess which of my forebears I want to be like?
Yeah, you want to be like your great-grandfather. That's right.
I mean, think about so here I am. You mentioned motorcycle touring. So I show a picture in the book where I'm older than my father at his age 65. I was 67 at the time of that picture. And motorcycle touring Australia with my wife on back on the wrong side of the road, you know, because Australians drive on the left side of the road. So here I am functioning at a very high level, motorcycle touring, which is a dangerous sport. You got to be, you know, competent mentally and physically at a point where my father was already degenerating pretty significantly.
Mm.
It was just sad.
Yeah. So we kind of want to be like, because I hear that argument all the time, Dr. Pizzorno, you know, my great-grandfather did this and the other thing. So what's the difference between y'all? And you? And so your book really paints a strong picture that it's the toxic load and the way we decide to live that can fix these types of things. And
yes. Yeah,
it's a wonderful read. I enjoy it.
Thank you.
Enjoy it immensely here. So I guess towards the tail end of the discussion here, we only have about maybe less than 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
Are there any really important other things that we didn't talk about, like other toxins, or we wanted to spend maybe a little bit more time? We spent time on the liver. You said the kidneys were important. I think they're under. I remember going to school. All the old timers would say, you know, when in doubt, treat your liver. But I always thought, well, what about the kidneys and some of these other organs? They're getting second-rate citizenship here. And they're very important, as you know, from detoxifying drugs and whatnot. A lot of the drug kinetics are there. And by the way, that's another issue is the polypharmacy that I think people are on that are also contribute to our toxic load. Will you comment on those few items?
Yes, you know, lots of great territory there. And so let me kind of go through them one by one if I remember them all. Let me go back to which are the worst foods. So it turns out the worst food, as near as I can tell right now, is farm-raised fish. Okay, farm-raised fish is a huge source of what are called the persistent organic pollutants. So I want to say number one is farm-raised fish, and number two, as near as I can tell, is the conventionally grown soybeans. So those are our worst of the toxins. Then we started looking at how we help the body detoxify. And as you said, you know, when we were students, we were told, when in doubt, detoxify the liver. But now we've got the problem with the kidneys. Mm. So when I was looking at what was going on with the kidneys, it turns out there were two key factors going on, three key factors going on with the kidneys. Number one was cadmium. So it turns out cadmium is so toxic to our bodies that our kidneys are extremely effective at getting the cadmium out of the bloodstream. Matter of fact, typically after exposure to cadmium, the kidneys will get all the cadmium out of the blood within 24 hours. The problem is it gets stuck in the kidneys, and when it's stuck in the kidneys, it's causing continuous oxidative damage to the kidneys, but particularly to the mitochondria of the kidneys. And when the mitochondria start failing and you don't have enough energy production, then the kidneys start to degenerate. So now, so cadmium is number one. Number two are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So people now pop Tylenol and things of this nature without giving it any thought. Well, it turns out these things are extremely damaging to the kidneys. And the third big factor with the kidneys is blood supply to the kidneys. So it turns out when you start looking at things like glomerular filtration rate, which, as you know, is a measure of how well the kidneys are filtering out the blood and getting the toxins out of the blood, it turns out that the glomerular filtration rate, which is the typical measure of kidney function, is hugely impacted by the blood supply to the kidneys. So it turns out all the factors that cause atherosclerosis in the rest of the body are causing the same problem to the small blood vessels going to the kidneys. And as blood supply to kidneys goes down, not only are the kidneys less able to get rid of the toxins and filter them out, but now the kidneys have less nutrition for themselves, and they're more susceptible to the toxins that build up in the kidney.
Mm.
So a very important strategy for the kidneys is, number one, stop damaging them, which means decrease the, you know, stop the cadmium, stop the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and stop the sources of glyphosates. And then number two is do all these things to improve the microcirculation in the kidneys. And one great strategy is, interestingly, is beet juice. So the beet juice is high in healthy nitrates that will, when they come in contact with the blood vessels, will cause the blood vessels to dilate. And there's a bunch of research showing that you could actually improve kidney function by having people consume things that improve blood supply to the kidneys. So good examples of that are beet juice is a good one. Another one is blueberries. It's a great way of helping the kidney function improve. Another one is the anti-inflammatory ginger. Will also help improve kidney function, because one of the reasons why you get that loss of blood supply to the kidneys is because of inflammation in the blood vessels going to the kidneys. So there's a bunch of things you can do, and I cover it all in the book.
Yeah. And I curcuma, there's so much on that, and hawthorn, Dr. Mitchell's favorite herb. We planted a hawthorn tree in the UB Herb Garden in honor of Dr. Mitchell a couple years back.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Actually, we just had, you know, it was the 10th anniversary of his passing.
I know,
and we
Well, very good. I really enjoyed our discussion there, and folks got to get the book. By the way, it's an 8-week program to detoxify your life, so if you start now, by the end of the summer, you will be less toxic. One last question, though, Dr. Pizzorno. Like, a lot of times I'll have very heated discussions with some of my allopathic colleagues about using blood levels to check for toxins.
Yes.
What's the pros and cons, and why aren't they trained in using other ways to gather the information to prove that you're toxic? Because a lot of times they'll say, you know, I deal with a lot of people that are on Medicare. Medicare doesn't cover naturopathic medicine. So I say, okay, ask your physician to see if they'll write a script for these tests to see if they'll pay for them. And sure enough, they look at me with a glazed over eye sometimes and say, oh, my God, what does this guy want me to do? I'm not going to run this test. So what are some of your advice to the listeners out there about some of the testing that's available?
Yes, big, big challenge. So the good news is that there are more and more labs that are actually running tests to directly measure the level of toxins in the body. The bad news is, number one, is that they're toxic, they're expensive, and number two is the primary sources that people measure are blood and urine. And blood and urine are great for acute exposure or current exposure. They're not very good at determining body load. So there's ways to determine body load, and there are both indirect and direct ways. Now, an indirect method that I recommend for everybody because it's so inexpensive is to have your doctor measure the level of GGT in your body. Now, GGT, as you know, is one of the standard liver enzymes that's typically only measured to determine if a person has hepatitis, because when the liver is damaged, it starts leaking enzymes into the blood like ALT and et cetera.
Right.
So so they typically measure for that purpose. Well, remember I said before, GGT is upregulated in the body to help recycle glutathione so that people have more glutathione when they're exposed to toxins. So it turns out GGT within the so-called normal range increases in proportion to toxic load. So that's the good news. So it's a very inexpensive test. Every lab has it available. It can be done. Now, that's good unless you're one of that 10% of the population who does not increase GGT proportion to toxic load. So those people, again, are going to be most susceptible to the environmental toxins.
Right.
So GGT is a good screening method. And so if a person has a GGT above about 20 to 25, even though the normal range is 10 to 60, within the normal range, as GGT goes up, so does risk of diabetes, so does risk of all-cause mortality. There's very strong correlations between increasing GGT as an indicator of body toxicity and increasing amounts of disease.
Mm.
So GGT is great. So if you have a GGT, a person over about 25, then you can use the GGT to monitor how well you're doing with detoxification.
Wow.
Now, if you want to determine body load of metals, the best method I know of is with challenge testing, and I use DMSA plus DMPS. And, you know, going into details of that is kind of beyond the scope of this
conversation.
Yeah,
you talk about that you need to go to a doctor to have those types of things checked. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there are a number of labs that are directly measuring toxins. There's one lab called Great Plains Laboratory. They're directly measuring toxins. And there's also some labs like Doctors Data that also directly measure toxins, that are, and the Doctors Data is quite good. So there are ways of doing this, but you're not going to get it from your traditional family practice MD, because unfortunately they were not taught this. And not only were they not taught it, they were pretty much taught to dismiss it. And
right.
It's unfortunate because this is hugely important.
Well, that's why we have books and folks like yourself and myself training legions of great naturopathic doctors to help our bodies, patients' bodies, bounce back and remain vital and heal themselves. That's kind of our naturopathic philosophical tenets there. So tell us a little bit about where we can get the book in the last minute or so of our program.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's very easy. It's on Amazon. Just go to, you know, Joseph Pizzorno on Amazon, or look for the Toxin Solution on Amazon, and it's available as a hardback and also as a as an ebook, so readily available.
So,
and also, I got a writer to work with me. So even though, you know, you've heard me here being pretty technical, I have a great writer, and she did an excellent job of making these terms and concepts much more easily understood.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, that's sometimes when we get together or have Michael Murray on or some other, we get a little carried away. But it's great nonetheless. I enjoyed our discussion, Dr. Pizzorno. And so that we just had, if you just... joining us or want the information again, that's the Toxin Solution, how
right.
hidden poisons in the air, water, food, and products we use are destroying our health, and what we can do to fix it. Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, P-I-Z-Z-O-R-N-O. It's been a great pleasure, sir, and appreciate all your work you've done to put natural medicine on the map again.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, I created the school for people exactly like you, with your dedication to healing and wanting to do the best to restore people's health. And, you know, thank you for being one of my students and for carrying on the work so incredibly well.
Thank you again, sir. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z signing off. Stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.